15. Back up here. Chivette stood beside the man watching Tessa release God's little toy. The camera platform, like a mylar muffin or an inflated coin, caught the day's watery light as it rose, wobbling, then leveled out, swaying at 15 feet or so. Chivette felt very strange being here, seeing this. The concrete tank traps, beyond them the impossible shape of the bridge itself. Where she had lived, though it now seemed a dream, or someone else's life, atop the nearest cable tower. Way up in a cube of plywood there, sleeping while the wind's great hands shoved and twisted and clawed, and she'd heard the tendons of the bridge groan, all in secret. A sound carried up the twisted strands, for only her to hear. Chivette, with her ear pressed against the graceful dolphin back of cable that rose through the oval hole sliced for it through Skinner's plywood floor. Now Skinner was dead, she knew. He'd gone while she was in Los Angeles, trying to become whoever it was she'd thought she wanted to be. She hadn't come up. The bridge people weren't big on funerals, and possession here was most points of the law. She wasn't Skinner's daughter, and even if she had been, and had wanted to hold his place atop the cable tower, it would have been a matter of staying there for as long as she intended it to be hers. She hadn't wanted that. But she'd had no way to grieve him in Los Angeles. And now it all came up, came back, the time she'd lived with him. How he had found her too sick to walk and taken her home, feeding her soups he bought from the Korean vendors, until she was well. Then he'd left her alone, asking nothing, accepting her there the way you'd accept a bird on a window sill, until she'd learned to ride a bicycle in the city and become a messenger. And soon the roles had reversed, the old man failing, needing help, and she the one to go for soup, bring water, see that coffee was made. And that was how it had been, until she'd gotten herself into the trouble that had resulted in her first having met Rydell. "Wendell'll catch that," she cautioned Tessa, who had put on the glasses that let her watch the feed from the floating camera.
"I've got 3 more in the car,"
Tessa said, pulling a sleazy-looking black control glove over her right hand. She experimented with the touchpads, revving the platform's miniature props and swinging it through a 20-foot circle. "We've got to hire someone to watch the van," Chivette said, "if you want to see it again."
"Hire someone? Who?"
Chivette pointed to a thin black child with dusty dreadlocks to his waist.
"You. What's your name?"
"What's it to you?"
"Pay you watch this van. We come back, ship you 50. Fair?"
The boy regarded her evenly.
"Name Boomzilla," he said.
"Boomzilla," Chivette said. "You take care of this van?"
"Deal," he said.
"Deal," Chivette said to Tessa.
"Lady,"
Boomzilla said, pointing up at God's little toy,
"I want that."
"Stick around," Tessa said.
"We'll need a grip."
Tessa, touching fingers to black padded palm. The camera platform executing a second turn and gliding out of sight above the tank traps. Tessa smiling, seeing what it saw.
"Come on," she said to Chivette, and stepped between the nearest traps. "Not that way," Chivette said. "Over here."
There was a path you followed if you were just walking through. To take another route indicated either ignorance or the desire to do business. She showed Tessa the way. It stank of urine between the concrete slabs. Chivette walked more quickly, Tessa behind her, and emerged again into that wet light. But here it ran not across the stalls and vendors of memory, but across the red and white front of a modular convenience store, chunked down front and center across the entrance to the bridge's 2 levels. Lucky Dragon, and the shutter of video up the trademark tower of screens.
"Fucking hell," said Tessa. "How interstitial is that?"
Chivette stopped, stunned.
"How could they do that?"
"It's what they do," Tessa said. "Prime location. But it's like Nissan County or something. Gated attraction. The community's a tourist draw, right?"
"Lots of people won't go where there's no police."
"Autonomous zones are their own draw," Tessa said. "This one's been in long enough to become the city's number one postcard."
"God-awful," Chivette said. "It ruins it.
Who do you think Lucky Dragon Corp is paying rent to?
Tessa asked, swinging the platform around for a pan across the store.
No idea, Chevette said. It's right in the middle of what used to be the street.
Never mind, Tessa said, moving on into the pedestrian traffic flowing to and from the bridge. We're just in time. We're going to document the life before it's theme-packed.
Chevette followed, not knowing what it was exactly that she felt. They ate lunch in a Mexican place called Dirty Is God. Chevette didn't remember it from before, but places changed names on the bridge. They changed size and shape, too. You'd get these strange mergers, a hair place and an oyster bar deciding to become a bigger place that cut hair and sold oysters. Sometimes it worked. One of the longest-running places on the San Francisco end was an old-style manual tattoo parlor that served breakfast. You could sit there over a plate of eggs and bacon and watch somebody get needled with some kind of hand-drawn flash. But Dirty Is God was just Mexican food and Japanese music, a pretty straightforward proposition. Tessa got the huevos rancheros, and Chevette got a chicken quesadilla. They both had a Corona, and Tessa parked the camera platform up near the tented plastic ceiling. Nobody noticed it up there, apparently, so Tessa could do documentary while she ate. Tessa ate a lot. She said it was her metabolism, one of those people who never gains any weight regardless of how much she ate, but she needed to do it to keep her energy up. Tessa put away her huevos before Chevette was halfway through her quesadilla. She drained her glass bottle of Corona and started fiddling with a wedge of lime, squeezing it, working it into the neck.
"Casson," Tessa said. "You worried about him?"
"What about him?"
"He's an abusive ex, is what about him. That was his car back in Malibu, wasn't it?"
"I think so," Chevette said.
"You think so? You aren't sure?"
"Look," Chevette said, "it was early in the morning. It was all pretty strange. It wasn't my idea to come up here, you know. It was your idea. You want to make your movie." The lime popped down into the empty Corona bottle, and Tessa looked at it as though she'd just lost a private wager.
"You know what I like about you? I mean, one of the things I like about you?"
"What?" Chevette asked.
"You aren't middle class. You just aren't. You move in with this guy. He starts hitting you. What do?
"Move out."
"That's right. You move out. You don't take a meeting with your lawyers."
"I don't have any lawyers," Chevette said.
"I know. That's what I mean."
"I don't like lawyers," Chevette said.
"Of course you don't. And you don't have any reflex to litigation."
"Litigation?"
"He beat you up. He's got 800 square feet of strata title loft. He's got a job. He beats you up. You don't automatically order a surgical strike. You're not middle class."
"I just don't want anything to do with him."
"That's what I mean. You're from Oregon, right?"
"More or less," Chevette said.
"You ever think of acting?"
Tessa inverted the bottle. The squashed lime wedge fell down into the neck. A few drops of beer fell on the scratched black plastic of the table. Tessa inserted the little finger of her right hand and tried to snag the lime wedge.
"No. Camera loves you. You've got a body makes boys chew cap it."
"Get off," Chevette said.
"Why do you think they were putting those party shots of you up on the website back in Malibu?"
"Because they were drunk," Chevette said. "Because they don't have anything better to do. Because they're media students." Tessa hooked the lime wedge, what was left of it, out of the bottle.
"Right on all three," she says. "But the main reason's your looks."
Behind Tessa, on one of Dirty as God's recycled wall screens, a very beautiful Japanese girl had appeared.
"Look at her," Chevette said. "That's looks, right?"
Tessa looked over her shoulder.
"That's right away," she said.
"So she's beautiful. She is."
"Chevette," Tessa said, "she doesn't exist. There's no live girl there at all. She's code. Software."
"No way," Chevette said.
"You didn't know that?"
"But she's based on somebody, right? Some kind of motion capture deal?"
"Nobody," Tessa said. "Nothing. She's the real deal. 100% unreal.
And that's what people want, Chevette said, watching Ray Toei swan through some kind of retro Asian nightclub. Not ex-bicycle messengers from San Francisco.
No, Tessa said. You've got it exactly backwards. People don't know what they want, not before they say it. Every object of desire is a found object. Traditionally, anyway.
Chevette looked at Tessa across the two empty Corona bottles. What are you getting at, Tessa?
The documentary. It has to be about you.
Forget it.
No, I've got vision thing working big time on this. I need you for the focus. I need narrative traction. I need Chevette Washington.
Chevette was actually starting to feel a little scared. It made her angry. Don't you have a grant to do this one particular project you've been talking about? These interstitial things?
Look, Tessa said, if that's a problem, and I'm not saying it is, it's my problem. And it's not a problem, it's an opportunity. It's a shot. My shot.
Tessa, there is no way you are going to get me to act in your movie. None. You understand?
Acting isn't in it, Chevette. All you have to do is be yourself. And that will involve finding out who you really are. I am going to make a film about you finding out who you really are.
You are not, said Chevette, getting up and actually bumping into the camera platform, which must have descended to level with her head while they were talking.
Stop that!
Swatting at God's little toy. The other four customers in Dirty as God, just looking at them.